Beyond the Vanishing Point by Ray Cummings. Chapter 1. The Fragment of Quartz. It was shortly after noon of December 31, 1960, when the series of weird and startling events began which took me into the tiny world of an atom of gold, beyond the vanishing point, beyond the range of even the highest-powered electric microscope. My name is George Randolph. I was, that momentous afternoon, assistant chemist for the Ajax International Dye Company, with main offices in New York City. It was 12:20 when the local exchange call sorter announced Alan's connection from Quebec.
"You, George? Look here, we've got to have you up here at once. Chateau Frontenac, Quebec. Will you come?"
I could see his face imaged in the little mirror on my desk. The anxiety, tenseness in his voice, was duplicated in his expression.
"Well," I began. "You must, George. Babs and I need you. See here."
He tried at first to make it sound like an invitation for a New Year's Eve holiday, but I knew it was not that. Alan and Barbara Kent were my best friends. They were twins, 18 years old. I felt that Alan would always be my best friend, but for Babs my hopes, longings went far deeper, though as yet I had never brought myself to the point of telling her so.
"I'd like to come, Alan, but you must. George, I can't tell you over the public air. I've seen him. He's diabolical. I know it now."
Him? It could only mean, of all the world, one person.
"He's here," he went on, "near here. We've seen him today. I didn't want to tell you, but that's why we came. It seemed a long chance, but it's he, I'm positive."
I was staring at the image of Alan's eyes. It would seem that there was horror in them, and in his voice.
"God, George, it's weird, weird, I tell you. His looks, he... Oh, I can't tell you now. Only come!"
I was busy at the office in spite of the holiday season, but I dropped everything and went. By 1 o'clock that afternoon, I was wheeling my little sport midge from its cage on the roof of the Metropole building and went into the air. It was a cold, gray afternoon with the feeling of coming snow. I made a good 250 miles at first, taking the northbound through-traffic lane, which today the meteorological conditions had placed at 6,200 feet altitude. Flying is largely automatic. There was not enough traffic to bother me. The details of leaving the office so hastily had been too engrossing for thought of Alan and Babs. But now, in my little pit at the controls, my mind flung ahead. They had located him. That meant Franz Poulter, for whom we had been searching nearly 4 years. And my memory went back into the past with vivid vision. The Kents, 4 years ago, were living on Long Island. Alan and Babs were 14 years old, and I was 17. Even then, Babs represented to me all that was desirable in girlhood. I lived in a neighboring house that summer and saw them every day. To my adolescent mind, a thrilling mystery hung upon the Kent family. The mother was dead. Dr. Kent, father of Alan and Babs, maintained a luxurious home, with only a housekeeper and no other servant. Dr. Kent was a retired chemist. He had, in his home, a chemical laboratory in which he was working upon some mysterious problem. His children did not know what it was, nor, of course, did I. And none of us had ever been in the laboratory, except that when occasion offered we stole surreptitious peeps. I recall Dr. Kent as a kindly, iron-gray-haired gentleman. He was stern with the discipline of his children, but he loved them and was indulgent in a thousand ways. They loved him, and I, an orphan, began looking upon him almost as a father. I was interested in chemistry. He knew it and did his best to help and encourage me in my studies. There came an afternoon in the summer of 1956 when, arriving at the Kent house, I ran upon a startling scene. The only other member of the household was a young fellow of 25 named Franz Poulter. He was a foreigner, born, I understood, in one of the Balkan protectorates, and he was here employed by Dr.